I have with me Dr. Brad Pettit, the Mayor of Fremantle. Brad, thank you very much for agreeing to talk to Fremantle Shipping News.
My pleasure. Nice to be with you.
What I'd like to talk about today is a little about yourself and a little about some of the big challenges facing Fremantle today, and I think fair to say, having faced Fremantle for quite some years. First of all, I'd like just to ask a little bit about your own background in local government. How did you get into this business? You seem like a very young man to me.
Actually, it was an accident in some ways. It was never lifelong ambition or anything. I guess what happened was I had been working away from Fremantle. I lived in Fremantle during my university days and later, and I ended up working in Cambodia with Oxfam and Canberra with the Australian government, and I come back and I'd taken a job at Murdoch University, and I actually felt a little bit disconnected from my home, from Fremantle, which I consider my hometown. And Fremantle had this really nice thing that was set up a few, a decade or two ago, which was called the local precincts. So, which is each suburb really has a local group that kind of talks about key issues in their community, and they feed up through the councillors into the council. So I got involved with the local precinct group, just a bit of a way of reconnecting with my community. I just bought a house in Whitegum Valley and was doing that. And soon afterwards, the councillor for that area and said that she was going to retire. And then, of course, the precinct decided to have a conversation about who should put the hand up and run. And I guess it ended up as the last man standing. So that was the accident in some ways. And so in 2005, that was, I ran for the East Ward, which is kind of the bits of Whitegum Valley and around that area, and was elected. And so that was certainly the first part of it.
That was the first of it.
Yeah.
So just out of interest, was it a highly contested election at that stage?
Actually, interestingly, it was, because at that stage there was a real pushback and quite an organised push from the Fremantle Society and others around what they saw as the direction that the council was going. But also I think the council was quite fractious at that point. So when I was elected in 2005, I was elected at the same time as Les Lauder and John Dowson and John Strachan and a whole bunch of others. And it'd be fair to say the first 4 years when I was a councillor on the council it was a pretty divided council, and one that really struggled to know where it was going. I mean, Peter Tagliaferri, who was the mayor at the time, had a hard job in front of him in terms of trying to kind of get all the councils on the same page.
So you've started to indicate by inference what some of the issues were on the council at the time you got elected. Did you have a particular issue that you stood for election on?
Well, I was actually, I was at Murdoch teaching sustainable development. So sustainability was always one of my passions then, and wanting to see the city do more in that area. But also, actually, it was also about the character of Fremantle. Actually, one of the reasons I didn't want to see what I loved about Fremantle as a unique port city kind of be eroded by what we were concerned about were some poor decision making. So, this story ultimately has a slight twist and irony to it, in the sense of I still stand by that, and that's actually one of the reasons that I'm glad to be mayor now. But of course, the people that I ran with around that joint idea of keeping the character of Fremantle now, probably there are some gaps have opened up between the Fremantle Society and I about what that character should be. And I think that's always an interesting kind of discussion.
Some of the people you've mentioned, of course, who were then on the council in 2005 aren't now, but obviously remain very interested in what's happening. So just taking the sustainability question, you said you were at Murdoch.
Yes.
I think you have a doctorate in that whole area.
That's right.
And specifically, what was your doctorate work in?
So my doctorate work was in sustainable development, but looking at it more from an international perspective. I looked at Oxfam and a range of international non-government organisations who were grappling with kind of global change, really, and how they had evolved as organisations, but were dealing with emerging challenges like climate change and other key challenges, as where development was no longer a simple process of charity anymore or trying to get people to catch up. It was actually a very different, much more challenging process around how you actually help communities be empowered, but also get on a pathway to a more sustainable future. So that was the thesis was called "Still Trying to Save the World," with a question mark. Kind of looking at the role of NGOs.
Yeah, I'm taking it that's still your mantra.
There was a little bit of a poking a bit of fun in terms of that title, but it certainly was an interesting examination around how you do progressive social change.
And it's interesting, you can go from a developing country context where you've got developing civil society, roles of government and the like, but transferring that and thinking very locally here in Fremantle, what sort of sustainability lessons were you able to, or do you seek to transport here?
Well, I mean, it's amazing actually how there is a lot of overlap. I mean, the best international development that Oxfam and other organisations do is really around empowering local communities to kind of not just be passive kind of recipients of things, but actually feel empowered and able to kind of have a say in their own future. And local government shouldn't be a whole lot different to that, where ideally your local community should feel like they're in the driver's seat and they can do things. They're not just waiting for the local government to fix it for them.
Well, it's particularly true, I would have thought, about Fremantle. One of the things that I detect about Fremantle is that everyone who lives here loves Frio. They all have that in common. When it comes to what happens in Fremantle, of course, people's views can differ. Mm. But still, you have that pluralistic approach to events here. You've got different organisations, different people, all sharing the love. But as I say, can fall into great disagreement when things are proposed that cut across things they hold very dear. What I suppose in recent times we've had the Conservation Heritage Precinct created more formally over the West End.
Yeah, well, so that was really proud of that. So that the West End of Fremantle now is 250 properties, the biggest single heritage listing, certainly in WA, and the Heritage Council of WA thinks it's probably the biggest in Australia. So and that we're really proud of that. It was, I mean, it'd be fair to say, it was a lot of hard work and a fair bit of negotiation because government were nervous, you know, around what that would mean and whether there'd be support from local landowners. So on one level we had, on another side, then you had the Fremantle Society saying they wanted it to be even bigger, and they thought it was not satisfactory that it should just be the West End of Fremantle. They wanted, or really, the whole of Central Fremantle to fall into that. I think what we got up was amazing, and reality is it's been talked about for two decades, and to have it finally happen and get up before this, before the state government election, which was a challenge because we knew the minister was otherwise he'd be back to square one. So that was really great, and I do think what that does is really important. It means that everyone can have confidence that the historic part of Fremantle is protected in its entirety for generations and generations ahead. And I think it should have happened long ago in my view, but at least now we don't have to have the same debate around, are you going to knock over this heritage building? Because that we can put that debate aside now.
Is the door ever so slightly open for a future expansion of that precinct?
Of course. Although, one of the key points is that the bits that the Fremantle Society wanted included are actually already on the state list in their own right.
As buildings?
Yes, or even as small precincts. Obviously, you've got the World Heritage of Prism, which they wanted included. You've got key buildings like the Fremantle Markets, the Town Hall, the Railway Station. Arthur's Head as a precinct is already on there. So reality is that they are all on the list. They're just, the Heritage Council rightly decided that the West End had its own story and should be on the list in it because of its own right, not just because it's part of Fremantle.
That rather neatly ties into a big question we might then turn to. People come to Fremantle. They know it's the port city. Fremantle has its own sort of political industrial history and all of that. And if you talk to anyone who's lived in Fremantle for years and years, they can give you a good flavour of how it used to work. It's changed a little bit now in the port. But the most striking thing about the port to me today is how it lacks integration with the centre of the old part of Fremantle. Mm. Not unlike the way it used to be, I say used to be, in the central CBD of Perth, where the railway divided the Northbridge area, the entertainment area, from the city. I think about a number of particularly Western European, North American cities. Well, I think of Auckland in New Zealand, which had a similar sort of issue with a railway line right next to a port cutting it off, and it's all been redeveloped quite superbly. Is there any chance that we can eventually achieve something? Well, what's holding back the development of the port area?
Certainly, I mean, I think this is one of the fundamental opportunities for Fremantle is the South Quay. So, I mean, the Fremantle port at the moment has two key parts to it, divided by the Swan River Harbour, the North Quay, which is where the container terminals are, and then you've got the South Quay, which is used for passenger liners, Ro-Ro, which is roll-on, roll-off cars, and some other kind of more kind of random, some occasionally sheep ships and a few other things. So that south side, the city's view, has an extraordinary opportunity because that's the bit we need to, if we can connect right back to the harbour, back to the river, without having that immense divide, then you can actually have the best of both worlds. And this is so because my excitement and my passion is that you would have a working port still across the river, but the city would go right up to the edge of that, and yet on the south side, and yet you would look at it and you can see that working port in the background.
Just try to develop that vision a little, and I know at various stages in the past, including with various state governments, there have been proposals, and I imagine it would almost necessarily involve some sort of public-private development mix to make it happen. But how could it interconnect? You've got the railway station there, that absolutely beautiful railway station, and the railway lines there. I suppose the obvious thing is you could sink, as in Perth, the railway line coming in further down Beach Street towards the railway bridge.
Yeah, that's right. And that would be sinking the railway line would be the ultimate outcome in some ways, because you really do have that seamless connection. Even before that, though, there are some fundamental hurdles that we're currently working through. One of those is that the port operations area really extends basically almost to where the railway station is at the moment. And you'll see there's a big black kind of gated fenced area, which is used for storing largely roll-on, roll-off cars, and it just surrounds the passenger terminal and other areas. The first step is that area from the very minimum from the passenger terminal back to the Maritime Museum has to come out of operational area and be returned to the city, and then actually developed in a way that when passengers arrive, they don't come out into a sea of Hyundais that have just come from Korea or whatever it might be. They actually come out into a proper precinct that has hospitality, that does have hotels, that has a range of restaurants and really great shops and pleasant things that actually you should arrive at if you're coming in a world-class destination.
Yes, it certainly is a strange setup at the minute. When a big ship, passenger cruise ship, comes in, parks at the passenger terminal, berths there for the aficionado, and then the people come off. Many of them come over the little footbridge next to a small, almost temporary coffee place, and that's their first look at Fremantle. It's I would have thought fairly uninspiring.
Yeah, no, well, in fact, worse than that, it's cringeworthy, slightly embarrassing, because I think they're seeing the worst of Fremantle. That part of Fremantle certainly needs a major facelift, and that little bridge, and people kind of tow their carts all the way up trying to find the centre of Fremantle. It's just not good enough. I do wonder whether some visitors go away thinking that Captain Munchies is the best food and beverage place that we have to offer, because they've given up at that point and turned around and gone back to the boat. What we've done, we actually did some work. We've got a macro plan to Marzi to do some work around. Well, what would it mean for government if that area was to be redeveloped? And in a way that's still consistent with the working port on the north side. So it wasn't long-term residential. Our view is you could put hotels and other managed residential into that area, and commercial and other things. And interestingly, it wouldn't actually cost government a cent. It would make government over a 20-year period $940 million in terms of releasing that land value and having it redeveloped and reconnecting the passenger terminal back to the city. So it's one of those great opportunities for government, and one which we think just makes a lot of sense. But we just need to, the only bit of investment that's really required is investment down at Kwinana to have those roll-on, roll-off cars to move there as quick as possible, which is really a lot of tarmac, and that's about it.
The other aspect sometimes of these sorts of development devolve industrial, semi-industrial precincts, and this can be seen in relation to recent airport developments around Australia. We, these days, to pay for airports, we get all of this commercial development, which if there were large commercial development around about that port area, it could meet some questions from existing traders, I suppose. Is that a consideration? Yeah, look,
This is the key balance we've got to get right here. I mean, and I think the reason we're probably talking about this more strongly now than we have before is with King Square now signed off, and that set that sense now that the centre of Fremantle is back on track. We're going to have 1,500 workers starting up in Fremantle in early 2020, a major new civic and commercial precinct completed by the end of 2019. So we need to make sure we get the centre of Fremantle right first. What we're envisaging for South Quay is this is really a 10 to 20 year project. It's going to require some good planning. In fact, I think this is actually a great bicentenary project. If you talk about 2029, and you know, I mean, obviously will be 200 years, you know, since the white settlement of Western Australia, and I think there's a real opportunity to actually start to plan for what's an appropriate way of kind of acknowledging that significant date, and I think that actually fits in quite well with ensuring that we bed down and get the heart of Fremantle working again economically, and then you can start to expand from there.
I'll come back, if I can, in a moment to King Square, which is an important issue. Before we leave the port, we had a very large ship in recently, the Ovation, I think it
was
called.
The Ovation of the Seas, that's right.
And I gather, because of the large number of people and the way the passenger terminal was designed, it created some congestion. Is that? Do you understand anything about that?
Yeah. Look, and I did go down to the passenger terminal when that extraordinarily large ship was in, with almost 5,000 passengers and 1,500 staff. I mean, and you got a real sense then of, I mean, it was great for Fremantle. We love having these ships in. We're now having more than 60 in a year. It's a growing industry, and it's great for tourism in WA, and really good for Fremantle. But it was that scene of the passenger terminal wasn't coping well. You had quite strange things where, you know, people were only a certain number of people were allowed on the escalator at a time and over the footbridge at a time. And I mean, it was really a little bit. You thought we could definitely do this better, but what it did pinpoint, I think, is, and it provided evidence to what the city has been arguing for some time now, is that this needs the state government to partner with the city and work together to actually improve this whole area, and everyone wins, and done well, it won't cost the government a cent.
Yes, and that includes the Port Authority, obviously.
Yes, and that's part of the problem, is the Port Authority are very protective of their assets, and I think it wouldn't be unreasonable for me to say that they haven't been willing to give up a metre of their operational area. We understand that, but our view is that government needs to take a more strategic view, where the Port Authority and actually work with the Port Authority to actually move some of those key functions out into the outer harbour in Kwinana, so that the inner harbour can be freed up.
Can I move to another big picture item? And I think each of these is pretty important to the present, but particularly the future of Fremantle, and that's the precinct that one might call it, that includes the Fremantle Oval, takes in the historic synagogue on the corner of South Terrace and Parry Street, I think it is there, and then going down South Terrace takes in the hospital. You go up Elmer Street and swing around, it joins up with the prison area.
Yep.
And in fact, within all of that, you've got an historic building, I think, the Knoll.
Yes.
And to look at it, if you could just take yourself up in a little bird's eye way and look down on it. In fact, it's not too hard to do that if you walk around the back of the jail and look down on it all.
Yeah.
It all looks as though it's crumbling, or ought to, in relation to some of it, have a bulldozer brought in. The hospital's grown like topsy over a course of 100 years, I suppose. But on the face of it, it's an area calling out for replanning and, again, integration with the centre of Fremantle. Are there, do you have any thoughts about it?
Oh, absolutely right. This is another area of extraordinary opportunity because you do have just a lot of government-owned land and assets that have just been terribly underutilised. The Fremantle Hospital, according to some reports, has been used at less than 20% capacity at the moment. And there's that's an opportunity. I mean, certainly while we're not, we would love to see it being used better and have have a lot more activity there, the fact that it doesn't need the footprint that it once did, it actually opens it up to properly redeveloping around the whole of the 3O Oval, including the old Stan Riley site on South Terrace, which is a 6,000 square metre site, again, with some partially used by date 1970s buildings on it. But also taking old heritage listed buildings like the Knoll and kind of bringing them back to their former glory and reconnecting them to the Oval as well. It's a great opportunity, and there's a lot of state government and land in that mix, and we're once again saying to government, look, there's an opportunity for a partnership here between the city and the state in a way that ultimately won't, again, cost the money because of the extraordinary land values that you'd have there. But to actually see Fremantle Oval really brought back to life. I mean, we've been really we were disappointed when the Dockers said they were going to move their training facility to Coburn because we worked pretty hard to keep them in Fremantle. But that mini crisis did lead to the opportunity of actually reopening up the Oval, both having East Fremantle and South Fremantle have their basically have that as their home ground, have a waffle game every weekend during the football season, other sporting codes happening during the summer season, and all of a sudden you have a really great community Oval that's used all year round with some great mixed-use development around it.
And just taking the football options of both East and South Fremantle playing there and having a waffle match every weekend, are they interested in that?
They are indeed, yeah. No, in fact, I think there's actually... Look, there's certainly... It's difficult for East, and we understand that, because obviously they've had a long history at Shark Park. But I think there's no doubt that the sharing of facilities in terms of... is the way to go. And that actually opens up some great opportunities for East Fremantle too, because they can then pull down the fences on East Fremantle Oval and actually have that much. It's still, I mean, the Sharks still may train there on occasion, but it will largely become a community space and a community oval again. And it's one of those things where you see that once all these things start to line up, it's just everyone wins in all the different communities, and it just starts to make a lot of sense. So it's just but it is quite difficult when you've got so many different players and so many, and so we're still trying to work out. The Dockers have a long lease at the moment, which we're still trying to work through how they can give that up so we can move on to the next stage.
You've just made me wonder what training night with both East Fremantle and South Fremantle might turn into a derby.
Yeah, that's right. We might have to keep the training separate, that's for sure.
Now, leaving that aside and then coming back to the recent announcements about the... about the redevelopment of King's Square. It's a fabulous part of Fremantle, and one way and the other over the time since John Rowe brought down the first town plan for Fremantle, it's sort of been disfigured in a way. It's had roads through it, and they've been closed off. You've got a church on one part of it. You've got the old town hall, beautifully and currently being renovated, on the corner there. You've got the council offices, which were grafted onto all of that at some point. You had the Queensgate development, from memory, in the late 80s.
Yep, that's right.
That came in there. You had the Myers building, not the most attractive structure ever put up, and probably the worst looking car park of all time behind it on Henderson Street. So can you just outline what the redevelopment that's currently proposed will look like and explain how it has come about, because you need money. And in this case, you've already alluded to the fact that there are going to be people coming into work there. How does it all work? How's it going to function?
Yeah. So this is a wholesale redevelopment of the centre of Fremantle. And it's ended up really, probably the easiest way of explaining it is like a public-private partnership between Sirona, who own the Meyer building, and the city, who who own the buildings that surround it. So obviously where our council offices are and the old Queensgate Cinema building and the car park. So we work with them around an integrated plan around that whole area, because it'd be fair to say, despite the good planning of our forebears that saw how that part of Fremantle should work, it's never really functioned, I think, ever in its history as a proper civic space. So what we will do is the Meyer building will get entirely reskinned, brought back to its basically bare concrete and rebuilt from there. I think there won't be many people who will be sad to see that go. The Queensgate building we have to demolish largely because it has sloping concrete floors, and unless you want to do a cinema in there again, it doesn't have a lot of a. In fact, it doesn't even meet current cinema standards. So that was it's a bit of a, you know, pretty frustrating to be demolishing a building that's, you know, just over 30 years old. But this is, it'd be fair to say it was never a great building. So they will all be redeveloped, and they will be the north and south precincts or campuses of the new government offices, which will be about 1,500 workers over 20,000 square metres. From departments of corrective services, housing, and parts of transport will all be housed there, which is pretty exciting. Then at the same time, we'll be doing demolishing the 1960s council offices. Obviously, the town hall will remain, and then there'll be a new Kerry Hill designed civic centre with a library and visitor centre and offices above that will sit in that civic triangle. And then a large scale upgrades to all the parks and open spaces around it. So we hope that when it's finished towards the end of 2019, we'll have a proper civic space for the first time in Freo's history.
And how do you see that civic space working? How will it express itself, if you like, whether it's in the daytime or in the evening in winter or the long summer days?
We want King Square to be a place that people want to come to and actually linger. It'd be fair to say it hasn't had a good reputation for, well, long as I lived in Fremantle, which is, you know, pushing on close to 30 years now, and where it's one of those. It's been almost a place that you just kind of pass through rather than actually linger. So key to it is obviously having, key functions like libraries and visitor centres and public meeting rooms and community spaces, but also having really important things like a major children's playground. What we want to kind of be actually like the best children's playground in the state. So you actually so that parents will come, kids will ask if they want to go to the King Square playground. So those kinds of things where we want it to be that real sense that it is the heart of Fremantle where people gather.
I always hate to import favourite places from the other part of the world into urban design and planning discussions in Australia, because there can be all sorts of romanticism involved in this and they can be quite inappropriate. But having said that, one of my favourite squares in the world is the Piazza Navona in Rome. And it's a lovely big rectangular space. But when you come into it, you're inclined to stay because there's places to sit and have coffee, to eat, and all of that doesn't intrude on the general enjoyment of the fountains and strolling through the area.
Yes.
Is King Square likely to produce those sorts of things that make you linger?
That's the idea, exactly right. So, and it's, we want it to be that place where people feel like it is the centre of Fremantle. I mean, interestingly, whilst the town hall was always designed to be the centre of Fremantle, it never has been. In fact, probably it's shifted around. I mean, I think a lot of people think of the Cappuccino Strip or something like that, probably more as the heart of Fremantle, and but as the east end of Fremantle grows, where we're, you know, looking at putting several thousand more residents in that area, the centre will more and more become where the town hall is, where King Square is, and that's what we want it to be.
Well, it certainly is an exciting concept, and I'm sure it's going to make a big difference. I've often wondered, as you've just put it, where the centre of Fremantle is. I think King Square's the logical place because it's the biggest space. I've often wondered about other places. Can I just ask you what your favourite redevelopments in your tenure as mayor are around Fremantle and things that, when you think back on it, have made some sort of some sort of difference.
Mm. I'll pick two because I think they, in terms of why, which I think is quite symbolic. One is the fact, and they're both recently completed, in fact, the heirloom development in the old Dalgetty wool stores only finished in the last week or so. And I just did a tour a couple of days ago. And seeing that adaptive reuse of an amazing heritage structure for 180-odd apartments, I mean, talking over 300 people, in a part of Fremantle that was largely forgotten and abandoned, you know, a decade ago, is extraordinary. And that kind of development that actually does keep the character of Fremantle. Coming back to where we're starting this conversation around, that's what we need to be doing, having developments that actually, I think, enhance the character of the place and have a real sense of this is special and unique and you can't get it anywhere else, for me, is really exciting. So that development for me, I think, is probably one of the most iconic. There's not too many old wool stores you can do that with. You've got a couple more weeks to work on, but that for me is a really important one in terms, and also because it adds apartments and residential back into the heart of Fremantle, and that's what we've got to do. When I became mayor, there were less than 1,000 people living in the centre of Fremantle. Our target is to, you know, push it up to around about 5,000, because if you think that's what you need to actually make a city work. But you also need jobs. And I love the other one that I mentioned, which is right down the other end of town, which is the Mediterranean Shipping Company, where, again, they've taken an old heritage building, adapted it, restored it, brought it back to its former glory, but added on a really interesting and, I think, you know, quite a bold design by Murray Slavin Architects that sits at the back there. And but I think is unique. You know, not everyone likes it, but I reckon I like it because it's
for that reason.
Yeah, because it's not just a generic bit of architecture. It actually feels like it's thought about the place and it's tried to respond to it. And I guess that's what we're really trying to encourage in our in new developments. And to be honest, we don't get that all the time. We do get probably more cookie cutter than I would like. But we're really trying to get that sense of developers in the Fremantle who want to design something that has a Fremantle flavour.
What is Fremantle design, do you think, in that sense? Is it what you see and know is just what's required once you've seen it? No, or is there something else?
There certainly are some key characteristics of it. But it's not like a rule book where you can give them those and they'll come up with it. Obviously, it's materials. I mean, things like, you know, red brick if you're in certain areas and that masonry element. The verticality, in the sense of where unlike a lot of it, more modern buildings, which are very horizontally wide. I mean, Fremantle buildings are traditionally kind of not so wide and have a lot more vertical elements in them and those kinds of things. But you can give an architect all those things and still come up with a poor building. It requires a bit of magic and a bit of creativity as well, and that's the challenge. And sometimes we get that and sometimes we don't. But there's one other one which I think is kind of interesting and it's probably also a bit controversial. Is there's a new development just about to just completed on Duro Road.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's a really interesting development, but it's got to come in for a lot of criticism. And but I like it because it feels unique and it feels interesting and it's got some of that industrial flavours that were down in that part of town. And so there's those kinds of ones which I'm really excited when I see those.
Well, as the interviewer, I shouldn't express too many opinions, but I just did. I drove past it recently. It's like many architectural developments. You have to wait till you see it finished. And in its finished form, it's something, I think, to behold. And elsewhere on Fremantle Shipping News, that will be featured along with the what's happened with the Mediterranean Shipping Company development in Cliff Street. It's really the sort of place that makes people want to come here to see what the discussion's all about, which I think is quite exciting. You were talking about the number of people needed to make Fremantle viable, is my word, not yours, but you talked about 5,000 people living in... Well, living where? In the old part of Fremantle?
So that's within the Fremantle broader CBD. And what I mean by that is really within 800 metres of the train station. So we have this idea of a bit of pedestrian walking zone back into the centre of Fremantle. So the 5,000 we're aiming for is within the west end, centre of Fremantle, but also the east end up to where the Dalgetty wool stores are and around where defence housing is. We see that precinct can hold that many people. And all of those people, what's... important about that is that they're all within walking distance of the centre of Fremantle. And that's what makes a great city, is when people can walk around, they don't need to get in their cars, and they can experience the best of Fremantle. They can get on the train, and I think that, for me, that makes Fremantle work in so many ways. Obviously, it makes your cafes and your shops and your restaurants and all those kinds of things work, but it also makes for a safer place, because the more people there are around, actually the safer places are. And
more eyes on the street.
Yeah, and that's been a big part of why I think parts of Fremantle haven't worked, because honestly it does feel like there's just not enough people around. So I think we'll see that transition over the next... I mean, we're starting now, and I think over the next 5+ years we'll see a lot of new residential development completed, and that's an exciting thing.
One of the challenges for cities and central areas like Fremantle, and you can go anywhere in the world where you've got places that one way or the other, whether they're older or younger, have those features that Fremantle's got: heritage, a desire to protect the fabric of the place, to have people walking on the streets and living in the cities, as you can't always have everybody come along bringing their own car with their own car parking having large parking stations, which causes lots of other tensions. Traders want people to come in and they feel as if people are being kept out, or it's an impediment for some people to come into the city because they can't drive their car and park there in the middle. But with 1,500 people, I think you said, coming to work in King's Square, many of them would be from outside Fremantle. Yeah. Some might eventually move in if that's where their job is. But that would put, generally speaking, some pressure on public transport, whether it's motor vehicles, buses, trains, Uber, anything else. How does the council see that sort of transportation, car use, fitting with these plans?
Cars are going to be an inevitable part of Fremantle's future. I mean, like me, Perth's a car-orientated city. So as much as we would love to get that mode share more weighted towards public transport and cycling and walking, it'll always play a major role. So our approach to that is actually, okay, we just do try and learn from and borrow from the best European cities in many cases, where what you need is really easy to find, easy to use public parking, good public parking on the periphery of cities, but so you can walk in. So what we're working on is racing around the perimeter that is really around Parry Street and the perimeter area, including with the Fremantle Oval Precinct, which would have a new... the idea there is to have a new 300 or 400 bay car park on that precinct. And then as you go around Fremantle Park, you'll have a range of these kind of peripheral car parks that people can walk in. That's how great European cities work. We're not quite there yet, and certainly I've been advocating that we need to close the Cappuccino Street more often and have it so that it's pedestrianised on busy weekends. Still getting a fair bit of pushback from local traders on that idea, where they think that actually undermines trade. And so we've said to them we're going to take a very evidence-based approach to this and demonstrate how, if we do it well and actually attract more people to Fremantle, everybody wins. There is going to be more movements around Fremantle, but our job then will be, obviously, public transport. I think we've got a good scope to deal with that. The trains, are only every 15 minutes at the moment. That can be increased, and that would be a good thing. And we've been doing a lot of work on getting people riding and walking. So I think a good bustling city, and I mean, it's a controversial thing to say, but a little bit of congestion actually is a sign that your city's working and is healthy. It's not actually something that you should be afraid of.
That's the equivalent of many cranes being visible in other cities, showing economic development.
Yeah, it's part of city growth, and it's a part of a healthy city. Yeah.
We're coming close to the end, but not so long ago there was the state government proposal to reduce the number of local governments in the state, but particularly in the metropolitan area, and Fremantle would have got to be a larger municipality if that had happened. There's all sorts of good reasons why tiny municipalities shouldn't exist. Fremantle's not all that large, but I imagine there are, conversely, a whole lot of benefits from remaining the way we are in protecting the fairly unique character of Fremantle. Do you have a view about that after all the wash?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of churn and noise for not much outcome, which is very frustrating because we've spent a lot of resources kind of that going nowhere. We were one of the few local governments that supported what was ultimately proposed for that, because I think they actually got the balance right in that case, which was, I do think there's scope for a bigger Fremantle. We're only about 30,000 people at the moment. I think about double that would be about the right size for us, where we don't get so big you start to lose what holds us together as a community and what does keep Fremantle as a unique sense of place and community. So look, and I think there is logical kind of connections, be it East Fremantle, parts of Hamilton Hill and Palmyra and Bicton. They're all people.
They're Fremantle people.
Exactly. I mean, in fact, my dad grew up in Bicton and went to the old boys school of Freo and John Curtin, and he always considered himself, even though he was from Bicton, as a Fremantle boy. And there's that sense of... So, look, I think that is logical. The danger around local government reform is you go for something really big, where it ends up being 100 or 200,000. Then I think you're in danger of losing a local government that can respond to, I think, what is a pretty unique part of the world. And we want to keep it a unique part of the world and not have it kind of lost in that kind of... I think it's very different to the rest of suburbia, and I like that. I want to keep that difference.
So, to finish off, what is it? And you've probably said this on a number of occasions in the course of this discussion in different ways, but what is it that you just love about Fremantle?
Anyways, going back to where we started, because when I was away from Fremantle for those couple of years when I was working overseas and interstate, what I missed was that not only the history and that sense of place and the depth it was a place that just, I don't know, had so many stories, but I missed the community, actually. It's a pretty special place where you can walk down the street and you'll know people and people say hello to each other, and it's very different to going to a garden city or a Claremont Quarter where you don't, and I think Fremantle's pretty special at that. It is a village within a city, and it's got its own unique character, and it's a city that has values and opinions, and I like that. It's a really robust community, and in a pretty special place, and it doesn't get much better than that.
Well, Brad, thank you very much for joining me and engaging in this discussion. I've appreciated it very much, and good luck with your mayoral duties.
Thank you very much. Cheers.